I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. A unique and fascinating collection of artwork and artifacts comes to Vancouver shortly. Make Believe, the Secret Library of Mr. Prudhomme, will be here the 5th of July to the 20th of August. After getting great notices for exhibitions in Toronto and Saskatoon, the collection features original contributions by Johannes Skibsrud, Michael Winter, Sherita Warner, Evan Lee, Sarah Slecky, Elizabeth Béliveau, Stephen Price, Yi Kuang, Debbie Wong, and Matthew Hetty. They have created forgeries of art and books, vases, obituaries, and or self-portraits as part of the Prudhomme Library. This has been curated by Claire Battersill and Heather Jessup, the latter of whom joins me now to talk about this collection of counterfeits. I'll ask Ms. Jessup about our interest in fakes, how they've captivated our imagination, and just what we'll see. Heather Jessup is the author of The Lightning Field, which was nominated for a number of prizes. Her second book, This Is Not a Hoax, Unsettling Truth in Canadian Culture, will be published shortly. She holds a PhD from the University of Toronto in English Literature, and she teaches in the English Department at Langara College. Visit heatherjessup.ca for more. An associated book, a catalog of the Prudhomme Library exhibition, will be published in 2020. Visit prudhommelibrary.ca for more. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Heather Jessup. Dr. Jessup, good morning.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good yourself.
Great.
This exhibit, where will it be, actually? Because in all the material that I've been sent, I don't have an actual location.
Oh, yeah, in Vancouver. So the exhibit's taking place across Canada. It's been to Halifax and Toronto. Right now it's up in Saskatoon. And in Vancouver, it's going to be at the Vancouver Public Library, the downtown central branch, mm-hmm. on their new eighth-floor space. So that's where it will be taking place in Vancouver.
That's a great thing. That's on the floor there where you can access the garden up there, right?
Yeah, the eighth and ninth floors are connected through a really beautiful wooden staircase, and the patio is on the ninth floor, and the gallery space is on the eighth floor, but you can kind of intermingle between the two floors. It's beautiful up there.
Yeah. How did this all come about? Whose idea was it to make an exhibit like this?
Well, it was a combination of Claire and I, but over my colleague Claire Battersill, mm-hmm. but over 100 people, I would say, probably more at this point, have collaborated on the project through various creative ways, 3D printing, writing, research, history, all sorts of things. So, yeah, Claire and I came up with the idea originally stemming out of some of our research. So Claire is a book historian, and she studies small presses and the Hogarth Press. And then I am a contemporary Canadian, I guess, scholar. I have a book coming out in the fall on hoaxes. Mm-hmm. And we're both also creative writers. So we applied for a new chapter Canada Council grant, which we did not think we would get, but received one, to work on this exhibit, which sort of combines a lot of our different passions. Creative writing, history, historical fiction, from my end, fakes and forgeries and things like that, from Claire's end, books and physical printed matter and text and objects. So that's sort of how it came about, I suppose, was collaboration.
And I guess historically we have been taken in by, certainly enchanted by fakes and hoaxes and the sort, haven't we?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an allure or a frustration that humans feel when they encounter something and think it's one thing and then it turns out to be another. And fakes sort of embody that in a physical object often.
Yeah, yeah. I find that this exhibit's also timely. In the sense that a lot of us are contending with, I guess, dealing with what's fake in our discourse.
Yeah, definitely sort of the discourse of fake news, particularly for journalists like yourself, is hot in the media at the moment. But it's always been around. Mm. There's sort of always been dubious sources of information or streams of truth that we have trusted that have turned out to be really false or really misdirected. So a student we were chatting with described this project many years ago as fake old news, and both Claire and I really loved that.
How many pieces are involved in this exhibition?
There's around 20 individual objects, pieces of music, websites, book matter, sculpture, photography. So it's a various collection, and there's around 20 very different pieces that are touring.
And so in terms of transporting it from city to city, is that a, I mean, it's not big in that sense, is it?
It's been a big task. Yeah. I'm sure people who run large museums encounter this all the time. It's definitely made both Claire and I really appreciate any museum exhibit because so many hands go into making them, and the shipping and the collecting is actually a really big process. It turns out we're writers, and we, you know, to carry a couple books in your suitcase when you go to a reading is pretty simple compared to this. And also Greyhound shut down in the middle of all of this,
which
is actually affecting a number of artists, it turns out. So shipping is a whole other conversation I could have with you for hours, but probably very boring. It's roughly 8 very large containers that are being shipped, and that houses the signage and the furniture for the piece, much of the furniture. Some of it is IKEA hacked, some of it is borrowed, and the objects themselves don't take up too much room, but 7 big boxes, 8 big boxes, depending on how we're shipping it and what we're shipping, is sort of what we've been doing across the country.
And what's the reaction been? What's the response been so far in these various cities that the exhibit has been in? Let's say in Toronto or Saskatoon, I mean, how have they reacted to it?
Yeah, mostly the response has been really positive. People have used words like delightful or really important. We ran into a gentleman who was walking through the exhibit in Saskatoon, and he said, oh, this should be here permanently. It's really beautiful. So I think people are really enjoying the diversity of the collection. There's something for everyone. The stories that accompany the objects are really quite fascinating. It's a very text-heavy exhibit. Claire and I think of it almost like a collection of historical short fiction that you're walking through, so it does take a little bit of time, and we've been really surprised that people stay quite a while. They spend about 30 or 40 minutes sometimes walking through and reading everything, which is a real delight to us because a lot of people have put in their energy and creativity into it. So yeah, people have been really positive about it.
What's the process been like in terms of putting it together and soliciting the pieces? I mean, would you go to a specific author and say that this is what we're looking for, or would they come to you with say, this is what I want to do, for example?
Most of the story of the objects is that Claire and I sort of, I guess you could say, commissioned them from the New Chapter Canada Council grant. So how most of them have come into the collection is that Claire and I sent a writing prompt to writers that we knew across Canada, all the way to Newfoundland, all the way to northern Saskatchewan, all the way to the coast of British Columbia. And all of the writers were sort of given a prompt of, what strange fake object would you find in Monsieur Prudhomme's attic? So there's a frame story to the narrative that is rooted in real Canadian history, a real Francophone figure of Canadian history. And the writers were given that sort of frame and asked, what strange object would you find in the attic? So, and also a very important question, why would someone fake it, right? I think the motivation behind fakes and forgeries is also really intriguing to us. So these creative writers wrote really beautiful pieces, and then we gave those pieces to visual artists. And those visual artists were solicited different ways. Maybe the writer knew someone. Maybe we knew someone who thought we would fit the piece really well. Sometimes people just, you know, admired an artist's work and said, hey, would you connect with me on this project? So that way the artists read the pieces and made what they read, essentially. So they sort of made this short story collection, historical short story collection, physically come to life. And you asked, how has this been? It's been magical. It's been so much fun. It's probably like the best possible thing for any nerdy reader to imagine a world and then all of a sudden be able to unwrap and open a parcel in your living room, and then the object is right there in front of you. It's been really, really cool.
Yeah, it must have been fun every time something came in, say, and
absolutely. Claire and I actually kind of saved them all for one big reveal in her apartment when she was living in Vancouver. It was like a Christmas morning sort of affair where we opened everything up. And, of course, we'd read the pieces very carefully and knew the work really well. And then to see it physically come to life was really, really incredible.
It's a remarkable list of contributors as part of all of this. In terms of what it's been like to see each person's creativity come to life, if you will. I mean, that must have been fun, but fascinating just to see how they think, say.
Absolutely, and I think there's this really wonderful element of it being a voice that they're writing in. Mm. And I guess all of us as writers write in particular character voices, but it's almost a pseudonym, or there's another wonderful term that people don't use very often called heteronym, which is when a pseudonym almost takes on three-dimensional proportions. They come to life. They, you know, have bank accounts or have astrological signs or, you know, things beyond just a pen name.
Yeah.
So a lot of the writers have described feeling really free because of the frame of the prompt to create writers and forgers and makers that they normally would not have written. So that's also been really cool. And the other thing that is fascinating about it is all of the contributors are listed, and we have really marvelous writers on our list. Sarah Solecki, Sherita Warner, uh-huh. Michael Winter, really wonderful, wonderful creative folks. And no one knows precisely who wrote what or who made what. And that can also be a bit freeing, I think, as a writer or as an artist.
Yeah.
People are probably going to guess a couple of them.
Sure.
But there's an anonymity to it that can also be a little bit freeing, I think, when you create things.
As someone who studied this stuff, the motivation for someone to create something that's fake, something, you know, to pull a hoax on a group of people, on the wider world, if you will, is it always out of bad intention? Especially when you think about, you know, historically, you know, people getting taken in by all of these hoaxes and the sort. Or is it just something to you know, something for fun even?
I think there's a complex system of people that make a hoax. So we often think about the person making the hoax or the forgery, and there are so many reasons for that. It could be fame or notoriety. It could be money. Although it's interesting, none of our writers used money as an impetus for their narratives. Often in the way our writers thought about it, it was a particular person who felt left out of something. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example from the collection. There's a really beautiful notebook that's written by a female cosmonaut, and that story of that object is that the female cosmonaut kept wanting to go to space, but women were really kind of prohibited at the time from getting those positions in the space program in Russia. Mm-hmm. And so she starts to forge a journal. She's responsible for documenting her male colleague's condition while he orbits the Earth for the longest Earth orbit at the time. But she starts to forge the data to suggest he's losing his mind, almost as a retaliation against her exclusion from the cosmonaut program.
Yeah.
But then ultimately feels sort of sorry for her counterpart, her colleague, and starts to recognize that actually this mission to go to space is very trying on all human bodies and causes quite a lot of damage. So the stories take a lot of kind of nuance and different ways of thinking about why someone would forge something.
Yeah,
but there's also there's also two other parts to it, though, right? Of course, there's the person who reads the forgery or listens to it or experiences it and their reaction, and that can be really diverse. And there's also the institution that houses it, mm-hmm. whether it's a publisher that publishes something knowing it's not entirely a memoir, or a museum that put something on the wall when they're like, I don't know what if this is a Van Meegeren or not. You know, like, there can be a lot of different circumstances in that combination of viewer, maker, and institution that can cause that ripple of fakery. So it kind of depends on the circumstance, I think.
Yeah, and the way one reads it, I think, is also another interesting aspect that you just talked about. You know, it can be aspirational. We can look at ourselves through a certain piece, maybe. At the same time, it makes us look at the way, once we find out it's fake, look at the way, you know, institutions work and what is exhibited and what's not and whose voices are left out, if you will.
Precisely. Absolutely. And that's why I really love hoaxes, because they make us turn around and look back at our experience again. And in this pace of life, we often just keep moving forward with our experiences, and we don't have a lot of opportunity sometimes to just pause and reflect on what has just happened to us. But when we're disrupted in that way, when the very fabric of our trust is sort of thrown and we're like, what just happened? We're forced in some way to go back over the experience. And I think art in particular can be a really helpful, safer space for that kind of thinking, because it's not news and it's not, you know, the loss of a really important voice in an actual historical gallery space. It's a way of questioning those more concerning exclusions in a more playful, creative way. That's at least Claire and my hope for this exhibit.
Yeah, I guess another reason why this exhibit is so timely is that the world is all too real for a lot of people nowadays. That we need a place to escape. We need a little bit of, you know, something to believe in that's not quite real, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the title of the exhibit is Make Believe, and our children have actually been really involved in the process. Claire and I have had three kids under the age of three while we've been working on this project together. And I think they have informed the way we've thought about it a lot. So there's lots of opportunity for kids when they go to the exhibit to do hands-on things. There's rubber stamps and postcards and thinking about etchings of historical vases and things in different ways. And I think that playfulness of just having kids around while we've been thinking about this has really helped us realize how important that sense of imagination and play is in our lives.
Right.
So, yeah, of course we need to, escape is sort of not quite the right word, but really just recognizing that as humans we have an innate capacity to imagine and tell stories, and that's really important, that skill.
Yeah, indeed. And even knowing that it's fake, it can just be edifying in terms of how you look at your life, you know, an hour later after leaving the exhibit, right?
Yeah, I feel like this wonderful blur can sometimes happen where you're like, what is art?
Yeah.
What is reality? You start to look around and you know, you're like, is that a performance piece that's happening in front of me, or is that just someone eating their lunch? Like, and that can be kind of cool, because you're like, wow, actually, life is pretty beautiful. Or you can look at art and think, whoa, that made me really consider my deep purpose in life. So, you know, it can kind of go both ways.
Now, the exhibit's coming to Vancouver shortly. After Vancouver, I mean, what are the plans for all of this? Did you take it to other cities? I understand there's also a book that's coming out of all of this as well.
Yeah, Claire and I are hoping to have a book come out of the different pieces from the exhibit. There's longer writing connected to it. The shorter form of the writing is in the exhibit, but the longer pieces are online, and the story of the actual historical bishop is quite fascinating. We've connected with his family. His great-grandniece has given us historical documents from their family that are really fascinating. We've had some really remarkable reactions to the show, and we just want to sort of be able to put it all into a kind of catalog or narrative. And Wilfrid Laurier Press is interested. So hopefully that will come about in 2020.
Gotcha.
As for the objects, they get returned to the artists because this is only a limited time grant. So the grant facilitated the making of the work, which is really exciting. The New Chapter grant has facilitated the making of a lot of really cool art across the country in celebration and in questioning of our history up to 150. And so at this point, the art goes back to the artist. One artist said they're going to use their vase as a fruit bowl, so I don't know what's going to happen to the rest of it. But, we're kind of, I think Claire and I are both kind of sad to see it all go back to the origins, but also really, really happy that this weird collection of things has come together to be with each other for a time. So, it might have other iterations, but at this point, Claire and I have to go back to work and teach people. So,
well, my compliments to both you and Claire for putting this all together, and my best wishes to you both as you bring this to Vancouver, Make Believe to Vancouver. I appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate it, too. It's been lovely to meet you over the air.
The same. Make Believe the Secret Library of Mr. Perdomo will be at the Vancouver Public Library Central Branch the 5th of July through to the 20th of August. Visit prudhomelibrary.ca for information, and of course heatherjessup.ca for more. Heather Jessup, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.